This is TWiT.
The 10th anniversary of the passing of Steve Jobs. And I think people who are, you know, Apple fans will always remember that day, right?
Yeah, I don't remember instantly like what day is the anniversary, but as soon as like I saw like the video on Apple's site, immediately took me back to being in my old studio in my old house, trying to keep it together a little bit because my own parents had just died, both of them of long illnesses, and I remember talking to you and like trying to channel part of the love that our little community was putting together about, because I had exactly one personal interaction face to face with Steve. I didn't know him. We can't pretend that we had a personal connection to these people, to a lot of these high profile Apple executives, but they're part of the symphony of your life. And so when one instrument is stilled, it affects the entire piece, and it feels like a moment of transition. So this is the way that the community got together in 10 years ago to talk about it in a very, very emotional and honest way. It was still, I think, something that was quite beautiful.
Let's we can, I guess, I don't know. Can we play the film?
Yeah, you can.
Will Apple take us down if I play it?
No.
I hope not. This is on Apple.com on their website. Let me unmute the sound. Actually, is there sound? There should be sound. There it is. Let me start
your life
over.
Is just to live.
I'll go back a little bit. And I think, is this the Stanford speech they're playing here? Let's see.
It's a medley of speeches.
When you grow up, you tend to get told that the world is the way it is, and your life is just to live your life inside the world, try not to bash into the walls too much. But life can be much broader once you discover one simple fact, and that is everything around you that you call life was made up by people that were no smarter than you. And you can change it. You can influence it. You can build your own things that other people can use.
Good evening. I'm Steve Jobs from Apple Computer. We're very glad to be here tonight.
I think you always had to be a little different to buy an Apple computer.
Original Macintosh.
And I think you still have to think differently to buy an Apple computer. And I think the people that do buy them, they are the people that are not just out to get a job done.
Very
out
famous
to
picture
the world.
Of him in his very Spartan.
What a computer is to me is, it's the most remarkable tool that we've ever come up with. And it's the equivalent of a bicycle for our minds.
The Bondi.
This is iMac. The whole thing is translucent. You can see
into it.
This was
after his return. This was his first.
Pleased to announce today that I'm going to drop the interim title.
And he was the iCEO for a long time.
That's genuine.
We used to stand at the intersection of technology and humanity.
That's the beautiful.
And to make something for people that want to bring this into their lives and use it for things that make them more creative, not just make them more productive.
First MacBook Pro.
This amazing little device holds a thousand songs, and it goes right in my pocket. An iPod.
Oh.
A phone.
And of course.
And an internet communicator.
Very famous.
An iPod. A phone.
I love how the audience is just on the edge of their seats for that.
And we are calling it iPhone.
That smile, a huge smile on stage.
We have a chance if we stay focused.
This changed the industry. The MacBook Air, he took it out of
an
envelope.
To really continue to impact people's lives in some small way for the better. There's an old Wayne Gretzky quote that I love. I skate to where the puck is going to be, not where it has been. And we've always tried to do that at Apple since the very, very beginning. And we always will. So thank you very, very much for being part of this.
Yeah. Really, no one is ever better at introducing a product. And while Apple does great stuff today, especially their most recent product announcement for the iPhone 13 is beautifully done, it doesn't. It's not relying on the one person.
He had such a presence.
Yeah,
he was just like a master of his craft. And like the iPhone introduction, the Intel switch, those were a master of his craft at the height of his game. Just so well laid out. He paused. He waited. He engaged. He laughed. Like He was so good at commanding that stage.
Because he loved being there. He was so proud of the stuff he was putting out. I remember that I was at the introduction of the iPad, and it was, I think, the first one in which he was presenting sitting down in those really nice big black leather chairs, and he was very, very frail. He was obviously dealing with stuff. But nonetheless, every time they cut to a video, I couldn't watch the video because I was watching him like off stage, but close enough that I could see him. He was standing. He was watching. He was engaged with the video. He was beaming because he was like, oh, my God, me and my team spent so much time building this beautiful thing, and I can't wait to share it. I can finally blab about it to the entire world. And that was so visible and infectious.
Right below the video on Apple.com, front page of Apple. It's entirely, the Apple site entirely devoted to this. Statement from the Jobs family. I won't read the whole thing. For a decade now, mourning and healing have gone together. Our gratitude has become as great as our loss. Memory is inadequate for what is in our hearts. We miss him profoundly. We are blessed to have him as a husband and as a father. There's also a Tim Cook memo. We could probably read a little bit from that. The memo sent out to the staff team. Today marks the 10th anniversary of Steve's passing. It's a moment to celebrate his life and reflect on the extraordinary legacy he left behind. Steve believed that people with passion can change the world for the better. That's the philosophy that inspired him to create Apple, and it lives in us today. Steve was a singular figure. He taught us all how to soar. I miss him and will cherish him always.
There was a Johnny Ive one yesterday, too.
Yeah, in the Wall Street Journal. I can bring that up, too. Johnny Ive on what he misses most about Steve Jobs. Of course, I think there was no closer collaborator in the final years of his life than Johnny Ive. He delivered a eulogy in which he referred to chairman powerful. And co-founder of Apple as my closest and most loyal friend. He's, of course, since... left Apple. He starts his piece in the journal with, I have barely thought about Steve's death. My memories of that brutal, heartbreaking day 10 years ago are scattered and random. I cannot remember driving down to his house. I do remember a hazy October skies and shoes that were too tight. I remember afterwards, Tim and I sat quietly in the garden for a long time together. But I think about Steve every day. Steve's widow, Lorene, and I are close. Our families have been close for nearly 30 years. That's interesting. I loved how Steve saw the world the way he thought was profoundly beautiful. So, yeah, then it's a much longer piece.
The fragility of ideas. Yeah,
ideas are fragile. He says, if they were resolved, they would not be ideas, they'd be products. As thought grew into ideas, however tentative, however fragile, he recognized that this was hallowed ground. He had such deep understanding and reverence for the creative process. He understood creating should be afforded rare respect, not only when the ideas were good, or where the secret circumstances were convenient. Steve focused on the actual ideas, however partial and unlikely. I think that they had a meeting of the minds, didn't they? They had almost electric back and forth that made the two of them made stuff that was better than either one could make by themselves. There was
quite a synergy.
Yeah.
Same wavelength.
Yeah. It's interesting. He says, Lorene and I are at last working together. Here's a picture of Lorene Jobs and Johnny Ive. It's a beautiful picture. Lorene, of course, has become quite a philanthropist. So Steve's last words were to me were that he would miss talking together. I was sitting on the floor next to his bed, my back against the wall. After he died, I walked out into the garden. I remember the sound of the latch on the wooden door as I gently pulled it closed. In the garden, I sat and thought how talking often gets in the way of listening and thinking. Perhaps that's why so much of our time together was spent quietly. I miss Steve desperately, and I will always miss not talking with him. Quite beautiful tribute from Johnny Ive. 10 years... You know, we talk enough about, how Apple's done after Steve and all of that. But I think it's appropriate on this, the 10th anniversary of his death. He was young, 56 years old, to talk a little bit about our memories and thoughts of him.
I think he was aware that with Apple, he was building a cathedral, just like in the olden days, where the architect and the first planner would know that This is going to take so long to build that I will not live to see its final the final stone being set in place. And I think that part of his pride in Apple was making sure that this company that he had co-founded, that he had put so much of his personal stamp on, making sure that he was hiring the right people, instituting the right culture, putting the right infrastructure inside the company to make sure that that culture is taught and shared amongst senior executives, that this thing would go on and still be recognizably Apple and not just be, okay, well, technically speaking, we're making Macintoshes. Technically speaking, we're still making iPhones, but this is a financial company that dabbles in hardware, or this is a services company that occasionally does a health product because they thought that it was a fun enterprise to get into. That it will always be his greatest achievement, the company, not any specific thing he ever made.
And I think that, you know, what Apple is doing now is less crazy than it was when they got started, but creating a system that they have so much control over that so insular is generally something that doesn't work. And then they were told that over and over and over again, that the approach that they took of not having a lot of other people building a bunch of stuff for them, and they're becoming in many ways more that way than less that way, because they can. But the when he took it on, there was no guarantee that it was going to work. In fact, it was probably not. It was almost without someone like him, without that singularity and focus and the ability to keep that moving, there's no way. I mean, that's why almost no other company tries to do that, because it's an almost impossible cliff.
He got that idea from Alan Kay, who was really an amazing visionary, was at Xerox PARC, became an Apple. I think he's still an Apple fellow. He's one of the most inspirational people in technology. It was Alan Kay who said people who are really serious about software should make their own hardware. And I think Steve took that to heart. And maybe he turned it around the other way. People who make hardware should make their own software. But either way, that's Apple's
It's so
freedom.
Hard. It's incredibly hard to do. Yeah, it's incredibly hard to do what they're doing. But when it works, you are in a completely different place, you know, and that's what we're seeing with the M1s and with a lot of those tight systems. It becomes almost impossible to compete with because if you can get to the scale that you need to get to do that, it becomes really formidable because you kind of create your own weather system.
Yeah, and of course, Steve led the charge moving from the Motorola 68000 to PowerPC, and then from PowerPC to Intel. I wonder if he even contemplated. He must have, but it just took a long time. For Apple to build its own expertise. They bought PA Risk. Yeah. That I think he was involved in that.
PA Semi, yeah.
PA Semi. And I suspect that maybe was a distant dream for him. But now under Tim Cook, it's become a reality.
And in a lot of ways, if you talk to some of the folks that were there in the 90s when he took over, he put out a lot of fires really fast. Like Apple was, you know, they were going to hit the ground. Like the engines were on fire.
They were almost bankrupt.
The plane was going down, and he came in and did a near, it's like being down, you know, 22 points, you know, in the fourth quarter with 5 minutes left, and he just kept scoring, you know. But it was like you couldn't miss a single play and for Apple to survive. And he did all the things that needed to get done to turn it around. And then really, I don't think they considered it them stable until the iPhone. You know, like it was, you know, it was only 10 years. The iPhone came almost only 10 years after that they were going to go bankrupt.
Yeah. I think that's what, I'm sorry, go ahead. Am I interrupting or?
That's okay.
So we all have so much to just talk about sometimes. What I wanted to get in was that, I think that's part of what restored confidence in Apple, that there was somebody who was making decisions and sticking with them. There was somebody who had a plan. They weren't just flailing about saying, oh, well, what if we get Mac sold by Sears? What if we have entire product line which is just rebranded Macintoshes, but they can only be sold in a line of stores? One of the first decisive things he did was to say, here is our from a time where there was a book I have a copy of one of them. There was a book this thick just explaining all the different kinds of Macintoshes that are being sold under all kinds of different names, and he turned it into a 2x2 grid. We have the consumer, we have a consumer desktop, we have a professional desktop, we have a consumer laptop, we have a professional laptop. That's our entire line. And it energized not only restored faith in people who were investing in the company, who were going to be buying hardware for the company. It was also lighting a fire under the people working for a company, knowing that again, if he's decided to cancel this project, it's not because he's, again, flailing about saying, well, I got to do something, I have to show a strong hand. It's because there is a plan to save this company. And if we and now there's a target to work for, not just simply let's just keep running the clock and seeing what happens. So this is why Renee and I were talking before the show about all these really interesting devices that like BlackBerry put out and HP put out, but then like withdrew 2 or 3 months later because of total lack of faith. And that's the sort of thing that demoralizes a staff, saying that we're making this, we got the funds to make this product, but we have no idea whether management thinks this is important for the company or not. And maybe there will be some sort of a change in the tea leaves that will cause them to cancel our entire project on the most absurd of notes. Whereas if you're working for Apple under Steve Jobs, now you know that, look, we has pared down the product line to exactly this. This means that this is a priority. It might succeed, it might fail, but the head of the company thinks that this is important for the development of the company. So that's what puts your shoulder to the wheel even tighter than you would if you felt as though you were on a sinking ship.
And even then, sometimes to my own frustration, would change, you know, what was important and really dance with what was available to them. You know, so if you look at like when Apple really got, when Final Cut started going down the path, Apple started investing more in things like Shake and really thinking this is going to be a core part of our product until the iPod took off. And then they said, okay, well, this is going to be a smaller part of our product and, you know, eventually discontinued it. But you could tell that was something that they had decided was going to be popular, and then it just didn't turn out that way for them. But I think that it was, but so they were willing to dance with the market as well as be sure of what they want to do. And it's really hard to do both.